Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza and Matt Polacek, only on LA Talk Radio.
Greetings to all of you listening around the world, and a warm welcome as we bring you another edition of the Answers for the Family radio show. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza, and if you're a regular listener, thank you for joining us once again. And if this is your first time, please make yourself at home as we bring you Answers for the Family. Now, each week, this show will address issues such as locating your runaway teen, family crisis intervention, building self-esteem, dealing with addictions, and so much more. Now, having over 30 years' experience working with families in crisis, I've been fortunate to meet and work with some of the top professionals in many of the helping fields and skilled authors who are working to make this world a better place for all of us. Now, while my co-host, Dr. Matt Polacek, takes some time away from the show, we're bringing in some wonderful guest hosts who, like Matt, are making a positive difference in the lives of others. Today, my guest co-host is Art Torres. Art is a dear friend, a father of seven, and a fellow investigator who I've seen de-escalate many situations, making him a perfect fit for the topic of today. Art, first, I just want to thank you for being here on Answers for the Family.
Well, thank you so much for inviting me. This is exciting for sure. And being a father of seven children, I have a master's degree in anger, honestly.
or at least a master's degree in how to de-escalate it, right?
Exactly. Exactly.
All right. Well, our topic today, for those that haven't figured out, we're going to be talking a little bit about anger and things like that and how to de-escalate it. But let's think about this for a minute, because when people learn to drive, they don't jump from reading a manual to cruising the freeways or after a driver's ed. You know, they need a quiet, empty lot to safely build their skills and the confidence before facing real live driving challenges. Now, learning to disarm anger and hostility is significantly more demanding than learning to drive. So, where's the parking lot for that?
Home Depot.
Well, to discuss managing upset and disarming anger, our guest today, Jason Sackett, is a professional certified coach, licensed clinical social worker, and certified employee assistance professional based in Los Angeles with 25 years professional experience dealing with upset. That is, angry, aggrieved, hostile, and sometimes fundamentally unreasonable individuals, and the unlucky people that have to work with them. Now, Jason has trained hundreds of professionals in managing upset. He's coached C-level executives with volatile teams, facilitated over 350 workshops, taught graduate-level courses in forensic social work, and published dozens of articles and video clips to help people gain advantages in the workplace. His book, Compassion at Work, Creating Workplaces that Engage the Human Spirit. Now, this book details the steps to managing upset, and it will be available December 1st of this year. Jason holds a Master's of Social Work degree from the University of Southern California with a concentration in industrial social work, and he received a Bachelor's of Arts degree in anthropology from the University of California, Berkeley. Now, managing upset training has been highly sought and heavily attended by healthcare personnel, including hospital administrators, charge nurses and physicians, human resource managers, employee relations professionals, training specialists, and even attorneys have found the training invaluable. Jason, welcome to Answers for the Family.
Thank you for having me, Alan.
Well, when I got the opportunity to read the book and I got the opportunity to learn a little bit more about your work, I found it fascinating, because we're living in a time now where it feels like we have political agendas and such that are literally just the opposite of what it is that you're doing. It seems as though stirring anger and stirring some level of discontent seems to be the popular thing to do now in the media. So I'm thankful that you're out there, I guess fighting the good fight.
Yeah, thanks. I have no shortage of opportunity and need, thanks to everything that you just described.
That's definitely a full-time job. Yeah, you got that one right.
Now, I know that this is something that I'm guilty of, and probably a lot of people are, but let's talk about fear and conflict, and why do most people avoid it?
Lots of reasons, but the one to me that's the most obvious is that their experience dealing with it is just really unpleasant. Nobody likes anger and conflict, and because, you know, throughout most of their life, whatever experience they've had with it has not gone well. And that is due in large part to the fact that most people don't respond well to anger and confrontation. When they are confronted with that, most people respond with defensiveness, such as trying to explain or justify their actions. Others might become submissive. A few will counterattack. But defensiveness is the most common, and these are what I call natural responses to confrontation: defensiveness, counterattack, and submission. And they always make situations worse. So people experience conflict, they respond poorly, and then they learn to avoid it and fear it over time.
Now, you mentioned this in the book as well, but, I mean, why do going into some of these, you could call them explanations, because in some cases, you know, being defensive or something to one person is being defensive to another one, they just feel like they're trying to explain. So tell us why explanations actually increase the conflict.
Well, it's exactly how you said it. Each person perceives it differently. And the person who is angry, unfortunately, can't hear an explanation, no matter how good or plausible the explanation is, because when they're in an angry state, they're not using the necessary part of their brain. Logic doesn't work once they get into that state, and so explanations will always be viewed as defensive, and that will increase their agitation. I can demonstrate this with you if you want.
Yeah, that'd be great. Please do.
Okay, so let's just say for fun that I was late to this interview, and that caused you to have to scramble, fill in some time, disrupt your show, and of course that would make you angry, right? So let's imagine that happened, and go ahead and tell me how angry you are because I was late, and feel free to say it with some venom.
Absolutely.
And then I'll respond with a great explanation. Let's see how you feel.
Hey, listen, I've been here for 15 minutes waiting for you. Where are you? And what's taking you so long to get here? My gosh.
You know, I had a client in my office right before this interview, and the person had a real emergency, and there was just no way that I could end that that session early. And I'm really sorry that it put us back. There was just no way for me to get out of that.
That's pretty good.
End of role play. How do you feel?
I feel better, thank you. That's much better.
Yeah, because and I think one of the keys was it was an emergency. So, you know, in other words, if you just said, you know, well, you know, I had something else to do, well, at that point, that's like telling somebody, you know, other things are more important than you. But by saying,
but are you really satisfied with my response?
Actually,
I mean, are you?
Let me respond to it. Actually, I'll tell you what was really good about it is you de-escalated me.
Instead of, I escalated you.
Yeah, you de-escalated me. So instead of engaging me and getting me angry because you're not answering my question, you actually gave me a reason why you're really late, and I can't get angry because someone else is, you know, making you late. That was really good. Actually, I enjoyed that.
Oh, well, that was a fluke then, because that wasn't supposed to work. That was a defensive response.
It worked fine
for
me.
You told me you were angry. You were saying, hey, where are you? You know, you're 15 minutes late. And I said, hey, I'm sorry, I had an emergency. So I think because it was an artificial example, you probably weren't worked up enough. But if you were truly angry, you would not that wouldn't have mattered. My explanation would not have mattered. You would have said, you know, something. That's I understand things happen, but you know that doesn't help me on my end.
Yeah, I think my kids would agree with you.
Yeah, and Jason, I think you bring up a good point, and I think a lot of it has to do with where we're coming from. And so, for instance, with Art and I, in the field that we work in, you know, an emergency may be that we just got a call from somebody and their 15-year-old daughter has OD'd and we need to get there immediately to get them to a place to detox or to a hospital or something. So the term emergency to us may mean more than to somebody else.
That's a good point.
Or because of the fact that we know what your profession is, an emergency may be the fact that, you know, there is something that's gone on with one of your clients that has caused such a turmoil that they needed you. So because of the industry that I think we're in, we may accept that better than what maybe the average person might.
I got you. So what if my explanation were not so exquisite? What if I said, I'm sorry, I was stuck in traffic. Traffic was just worse than I expected this morning, and I just got in. I called you as soon as I could.
Well, and then at that point, my thought would be, because I know that you're based in Los Angeles, you live here. We both live here. We know what traffic is in Los Angeles. Yeah, I know that Art had to drive from San Diego, and I drove from Huntington Beach, and we managed to get here, on time.
Yeah, that would anger me if you told me that the traffic is bad. I mean, we know the traffic's bad.
Okay, so in that sense, my defensive response did not work. You're not satisfied.
Correct.
Okay, so that's kind of my point, is that when someone is angry because they feel wronged, very few explanations are going to work. Okay, so my first one worked on you because you're sensitive to the word emergency. but that has failed on me in the past. One time I had to cancel a session on someone because there was a real emergency, like someone literally jumped off a building and I had to close my whole office and scramble to go deal with witnesses. And I had to call and cancel the people that were on my schedule, and one of them said, you couldn't have picked a worse time to cancel on me. Click.
Wow, that's crazy. Holy smokes.
So when people, that's my point, when people are angry, that even a great explanation can fail, can make the person more agitated. So that's why I teach disarming, because we need something else. We need something better than an explanation, especially for people who can't hear it.
Okay, so in that situation that you just described, in your situation, at some point in time, you're going to talk to that person again. How would you speak to that person when you called them back to be able to reschedule? How would you disarm them?
Well, I'm speaking from experience, because that's exactly what I did. And so I called this person back and I said, hey, look, I am so sorry that I had to cancel on you that day. We had an agreement. We had an appointment, and you were counting on me to see me at that time. Clearly, you had some really critical needs. I could tell by the response that you gave when I canceled the appointment, and me not being available to help you then put you in a real bad spot. It made your situation even worse. And I'm sure that must have made you furious with me. Did I get that right?
Yeah, that's pretty good.
and that person turned out to be one of my all-time favorite clients. I'd seen that person one time prior to that happening, and this person has turned out to be one of my all-time favorites. We have a great relationship. So,
right.
So basically, I unfired myself and turned this person into one of my best clients ever.
I should have introduced you to my ex-wife. That's really good.
Well, but now to kind of take off from that point. So I think for everybody out there. So what I hear you saying is that what you did was you immediately went straight to the point of, I'm sorry, and I understand that this was very important to you, and that you had made plans for this, and that you had a responsibility to keep them, and so on. And so, but you immediately just went to the point of making sure that they understood that they are important and they weren't just blown off. You're absolutely right. The feeling is much better on that than something like, hey, I got stuck in traffic. It happens.
See, the fundamental difference is that I shifted the the focus of the conversation from myself to the other person. In the first example, I'm defensive, right? I'm saying, well, I was stuck in traffic or I had an emergency. It's the focus is on me. Whereas in the second example, I'm focusing on the other person. You were counting on me to help you that day. We had an agreement. And so that's the first thing I do is I shift the focus to the other person. And I really try to listen to what their needs are and to generate some sincere empathy and compassion for what they're going through, even if the tone that they're taking is aggressive, or even if their perspective might feel a little irrational on my part, because, you know, their truth is different than my truth.
Now, what are some of the things that we have to do? I mean, it's easy for you to say that, and for somebody to go, okay, I heard it, but now to actually put that into play. How emotionally grounded do we have to be able to be the person that can recognize that and not respond? Because there's that initial urge at that point when somebody says that, to be able to come right back and go, you know, when they hang up or they're angry, to call back and go, hey, look, buddy, somebody jumped off of a roof. So share with us kind of what we have to do to be that emotionally grounded to where we don't respond that way.
Well, you said it, Alan. The prerequisite to effective disarming is being emotionally grounded. You cannot do this effectively if you are riled or rattled. It simply won't come out as sincere. You'll be too focused on your own feelings. So sometimes it takes a pause, and that's legitimate. I think that some of the most successful disarming happens after the fact, where you've like basically requested a timeout, where you said, hang on, hold that thought for a second, I'll get right back to you. Or in this case, the person has hung up on me, so I can call her back, the following day after I've had plenty of time to ground myself. But whatever it takes, whether it takes asking for a timeout or just taking a really deep breath, you got to get grounded first. It also takes practice too. I think that the more you practice this and the more you do this, you start to go through a kind of exposure therapy, where you've done so many simulations of people attacking you and expressing strong anger at you that it no longer has the same effect on you when you keep practicing it and you keep coming out on top. So that's really a key to have this exposure therapy where you're simply not rattled at that first attack. So exposure therapy and buying time are really the keys to that.
Now, in the book, you mention a little bit about sort of a four-step technique. Share with us a bit about that.
Yeah. So once you are grounded and ready to listen to the other person, I teach four consecutive steps. For me, it's the easiest way to remember it and to pull it out in the moment. And so I'll run you through those if you would like.
You might have
heard those in my example. You could probably, as I describe them, you can go back to my example and sort of hear those steps. But the first step is what I call a statement of gratitude, where you say something like, I'm really glad that you said that, or it really helps me that you brought that to my attention, or I often wondered if people thought that way. Statement of gratitude, what it does is that statement itself buys you time, because that one you can have prepared, right? Like this is the one, this first step you actually have in your back pocket. You've prepared these, you've rehearsed these, and the moment somebody confronts you, you say, wow, that really helps me that you're telling me that. And so that buys you time to go into the next step. It also throws the other person off balance a little bit, because people aren't expecting you to respond that way.
Yeah,
most people,
sure,
when they go on the offensive, they're expecting a defensive response. So when they say when they hear, "Wow, I'm really glad you told me that," they're like, "What? What do you mean?" So it gives you a moment of advantage.
Yeah, that makes sense completely. So basically, it's a word phrase that done correctly, obviously, it leads to a different ending. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And the reason I call it statement of gratitude is that you're expressing gratitude for their directness. Okay, you're ignoring their style. The person could have been as nasty and hostile as you could imagine, but what you are grateful for is their directness. Because if someone's not direct, if they hold on to their feelings, then you can't deal with them. They're going to turn passive aggressive on you, and we have no answer for that. So yes, you are grateful for the directness. You give this statement of gratitude. I'm really, you know, pleased. I mean, it really helps me that you told me that. And then you go into the second step, which is what I call finding truth in the complaint. So everyone's complaint has some truth, right? This person said, "You couldn't have possibly canceled on me at a worse time, click." So what's the truth in that statement? Well, yes, it's not relevant how bad the timing was for me. It's only relevant to the other person. This was a bad time for her. So I can say, "Yeah, you're right. I did cancel on you, and, you know, as you said, it was a really, really bad time." There's truth in that complaint. If I can identify that, that's already going to disarm some of that person's anger.
Mm-hmm. Because basically gives acknowledgement, is what you're saying.
Yeah, it's an acknowledgement of their truth. Now, that's an easier one because it's a little more concrete, right? Even the first one, you know, where you said, "Jason, you know, why are you so late?" The truth is evident, right? Like, I was late. It's not debatable. Sometimes complaints are a little less clear. You know, one time I did a workshop, and I thought I did a pretty good job. And afterwards, this person comes up to me and says, "You know, you're bar none the worst facilitator I've ever had to endure." I'm just
wow,
like, wait,
wow.
What?
Well, that's
like,
a statement.
So where's the truth in that complaint, right? Like how do I identify a truth? I can't just agree with the person. I can't be insincere and say, "Well, you're right. I did do a terrible job," because I don't believe that.
Right.
So where's the truth? The truth in that complaint is that my performance did not work for that person.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So I can say, clearly, what I did today didn't work for you.
Yeah.
Which can happen. Sure.
That's a truth I can agree with. So once I've identified some truth in the complaint, then I move to what I consider the most challenging part of disarming, which is cognitive empathy, developing cognitive empathy. So cognitive empathy is getting into the mind of the other person, trying to see their point of view, trying to identify why the issue matters to them, what needs or expectations are not being met, and really showing that understanding. I never want to use the words "I understand" because that will always get thrown back in my face. you can't just say you understand. You have to show you understand through cognitive empathy. So in my couldn't have canceled on me in a worse time example, I said, "Yeah, you know, this was a really bad time for you. We had an agreement. You were expecting me to keep this appointment. You needed help, and I wasn't there for you. And the fact that I wasn't there for you left you in a really bad spot. It left you feeling vulnerable, unsupported, and without recourse. And so there, I'm just trying to capture as much of that cognitive empathy as I can. It's like I said, it's the hardest part because you're having to read into the situation without a whole lot of information, right? The person hasn't said a whole lot.
Sure.
Right.
So you're having to be somewhat intuitive and analytical here, and you could get it wrong too, but that's okay. It's okay if you get it wrong. You just want to be as, you know, you want to be as sincere in your attempt as possible. If I attempt to develop cognitive empathy and I'm wrong, the person will always tell me I'm wrong, and then I just try to listen a little bit more closely.
You know, and I mean, it makes good sense. And, you know, as you were saying that, I was thinking about some of those steps. And one of the things that, you know, that I do that has, you know, for instance, if I have a client that calls and has a complaint and they say, your people were supposed to be here at 3 a.m. and they didn't arrive until 3:30, and you can't possibly understand the stress that I was going through during that period of time until they got here. And I start each one of those answers with, first of all, I just want to thank you for sharing this with me, because I cannot, I cannot fix that if I don't know. So for you to share that with me, you know, I really am grateful that you're doing that. And now that you have shared that with me, let me tell you that I'm deeply sorry, and here's what we're going to do about it. So I think that that's the other thing is that besides the showing grateful and stuff, but I think they need to know that you get it, that you acknowledge, you know, that you can understand how much stress that they were under that time, but also that you're going to do something to change it so it doesn't happen again. And I think that's what a lot of businesses run into.
Yeah, Alan, can I interject a couple of ideas into your example there?
Please do.
So I think offering solutions is helpful. The mistake in timing that most people make is that they try to offer solutions or problem solve too early, before the person is completely disarmed. So they're still angry, they're still not rational, they're not yet interested in the solution. They want to be heard. So even before you offer your solution, I think your statement of gratitude is a really good one, by the way. And you covered the truth and the criticism too. You said, yeah, you're right, they're not there. And then you could actually develop a little bit more cognitive empathy in that response too. You could say, we had an agreement, we contracted for my people to be there at 3 a.m. They weren't there when they were supposed to, and you were really counting on us to be there at that time. You're dealing with, you know, some kind of a situation here where you really need our help, and when we're not there, again, you're feeling very alone, unsupported, let down, and not getting the help that you need. And then you move into the fourth step, which is the emotion, recognizing or displaying emotional empathy. Mm-hmm. So, and that is basically recognizing anger. So then you would say, yes, and I could see why you would be very angry with us for not showing up, and basically for all those reasons I just said.
Right.
I could see why you'd be really angry. Did I get that right?
Yeah, you know, it's funny you're saying that, because, you know, I think more importantly, it's the timing of what's said, like you're saying. Because I think if you say it out of order, if you say it too soon, it just makes the person even more angry. So I think by what you're saying here is, which, you know, first of all, most important, I think, is just to listen, to make sure you get all the information they're trying to tell you. Because a lot of times when people are angry, they're not angry. They're just, you know, there's a difference between angry and upset. And when they're angry, they're just shouting out things they really don't need, like, you know, my kids need, you know, homegrown strawberries. That's not what they really meant. They're just angry that they're not getting strawberries at all, but they had to put the little homegrown just to make you more aggravated. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and I agree with you that, regardless of sort of the level of anger that you identify, whether it's anger or frustration, although I tend to shoot for the higher one. if people are confronting me, I can pretty much presume that they're angry. But you're right, the order is important. And the reason that I don't lead with that, what if that person called you and the first thing out of your mouth was, wow, I can see that you're really angry with us. What are they going to say?
Yeah, if it's the first thing, yeah, they're going to go, yeah.
Yeah, thank you, Captain
right.
Obvious, right?
Yeah, exactly. That's funny.
So you actually have to earn the right to demonstrate emotional empathy. And that right comes through, you know, finding the truth in the complaint and developing cognitive empathy first. And once you have done that, then you've shown them that you understand why they're upset, and then you simply, you know, name that feeling. And at that point, you've really addressed all of their issues, and then you finish it off with, you know, am I getting that right? Am I missing anything? And if you are, if you missed something, they'll tell you. And if not, what else can they say? You've completely addressed their issues. Now they're back to the right part of their brain, the necessary part of their brain, the cortex, where they can listen to reason and have a conversation. Now you can offer your solutions.
You know, I've got 7 kids that would disagree. They say I never understand, but I guess just being a dad.
At least not all at once, right?
Yeah. I have 4 girls, and believe me, every day is a brand new day. It's amazing.
Yeah, and so sometimes people want to use that inquiry a little bit earlier, like as soon as someone confronts them, they'll say, "Well, can you tell me more about that? What's making you say that?" And then the reason I don't like to, you know, lead with inquiry is that it tends to escalate people, right? They just find more things to complain about, or they say, "Well, you should already know. You should already know why I'm mad. So why are you even asking?"
Yeah, that's a good point for sure.
So this is why I design it with the steps that I do, and so there you have it. That's disarming, 4 steps.
All right, we are talking with Jason Sackett. The subject is, how do you diffuse anger? How do you manage upset? And his new book, Compassion at Work, Creating Workplaces That Engage the Human Spirit. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about how this relates to family life as well. You're listening to Answers for the Family.
Founded over 30 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, Westshield has continually focused on resolving issues that negatively impact families and businesses. Our signature therapeutic transportation service helps to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely transported to specialized schools, programs, and treatment centers with unsurpassed experience and success. We are supported by our full-service licensed investigation agency that has legally, professionally, and compassionately located hundreds of runaways and teens. We are experienced and qualified to help, offering solutions which may include referrals to our international network of top professionals in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, psychiatry, and investigations. Simply put, Westshield Adolescent Services and Westshield Investigations are the best solutions when your family is facing a personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. That's 1-800-899-8585, or visit our website at westshield.com. Thank you.
And we're back. You're listening to Answers for the Family. And if you would like to follow along online, if you go to www.managingupset.com, you can follow along a little bit about Jason's book and learn a little bit more about not only managing upset, but various levels of dealing with anger.
Absolutely. You know, I do have a question for you. I mean, in this day and age, I guess, I mean, do you do most of your disarming training within organizations? And if you do, you know, how does that apply to families?
Yes, the most of the trainings that I've done has been, you know, within organizations, sponsored by organizations. But I have trained a lot of individuals as well. I still do some clinical work as an employee assistance professional. And I get a lot of family issues come up, both, you know, between, you know, conflicts between spouses, parent-child issues, and you know, when it comes to actually doing something about it, we always end up at disarming anyways. So my feeling is that anger is anger. you know, Everybody gets angry, including spouses, siblings, parents, children.
I never do. I'm very calm.
Well,
that's,
you know,
a lie.
at least no one had to disarm you. Yeah. but the rest of us aren't so lucky. Maybe I'm just a magnet for it. I don't know.
Yeah, I love that.
but I find that usually the nicest people are the ones who tend to get to be on the receiving end of this the most. And so so we have to, you know, it's very helpful to know, to have a tool to for dealing with it when it comes up. I think with children and adolescents especially, disarming works like magic. They never see it coming, and they're always shocked because they're so used to being treated with authority, right? When children are sort of against the rules on something or out of bounds, what are they confronted with? It's always authority.
Mm-hmm, sure.
And so if someone, if the parents, if a child is angry and a parent uses, truth in the complaint, cognitive empathy, emotional empathy, separate from authority, they're shocked. They never see it coming. And it takes a lot of the energy out of their disposition, and they suddenly can become very cooperative. And children can do it to parents as well. Parents are also shocked when their children disarm them. They're like, wait, where'd you learn that?
Yeah, I've got one of those. She's a high school grad this year. She's very good at disarming me.
How does she do it?
She just looks at me with those big round eyes, and I'm done, basically. I start in, like a tiger, and then I'm done. It doesn't really matter. I give. After seven kids, I'm like a marshmallow, honestly.
So she's got a secret weapon, which is what I call a diffusing demeanor. Some people have that naturally. My college roommate had a very diffusing demeanor. I had a graduate intern a couple of years back who had an incredibly disarming demeanor. Like it was impossible to be mad at her. Not that she did much to be mad at, but yeah, like you said, all she had to do is look at you, and even if she did a mediocre job with those steps, very disarming. But the two in combination are pretty much unstoppable.
Yeah, you're right on that one.
Now, I love the fact that, that we're talking about, these things that are so positive that improve communication rather than isolating communication. Now, other than getting your book, what are some ways that people can learn more about disarming, or that they can get more training or practice at being able to disarm others?
Yeah, so first of all, I wanted to say that the book is actually available on Amazon now, so it can be picked up anytime. But the book is not enough, right? The book details the disarming process, but people really do need to practice it, and they need to practice it correctly. So I do recommend, getting trained in this. I will train, any group of 8 to 20 people, or if it's bigger than that, I will sort of divide the group into smaller sections, or if I can get someone to help me, we could take on an even larger group. I love training people in disarming. I've done it on an individual basis, but I'm not doing that so often, just because it's just so much more efficient and I think effective too to train in groups, because with the group training, not only do people get all the information, but they actually practice it. Half the training is just practicing the technique and getting that exposure therapy, so that people get used to getting attacked for various things and having to think on their feet, and then once the formal training is over, then they continue it on their own. Now they have the structure for it. All they need is just one other person to practice, attacking them and them disarming them.
Does that work if I talk into the mirror?
Probably not.
I'm glad to ask that question.
Probably not, because you're not going to be able to convince yourself.
You'd be surprised. I'm just saying.
Well, and I love the fact that you're doing the group training. And in fact, one of my thoughts after I was reading the book was, I'd love to have you in and maybe train my staff. And who knows, we could have you come in, train the staff, and then have you on the show again sometime in the future, and we can talk about the improvements that we've seen in that area as well.
Yeah, that's a great idea.
That would be a blast. Like I said, I train anyone who I believe is capable of being sincere. The only people that I can't really work with are people who simply aren't interested in it. Like they're being required to attend the training because their boss thinks they should and they don't really think they need it. Or people who just aren't interested. They're not sincere. They think that if someone is being, you know, angry with them or rude to them, that that person is in the wrong and they should, it's they owe that person nothing. You know, they have no interest in trying to be compassionate for that person. But I disagree. Yeah. I mean, I think that's, I mean, look, I can't tell people what to think, but it leaves them kind of stuck, right? Because if that's their belief, then that person will always be mad at them and they will always be mad at that person. There will never be any resolution.
You know, that's funny you say that, because we got called into a program, and I'm not going to name the program, but we got named into a program, and they were so impressed with our de-escalation that I was using, and Alan, they wanted us to come back and do it for their whole group. So you're absolutely correct. I mean, if you can get a couple of the ears to listen and then actually try it and see it being done, it's amazing what you can do. Seriously.
And you never know when you're going to need it, right? Like, you might need it at work. You might need it in your relationship. You might need it with your kids. You might need it with your parents. You might need it in traffic. I mean, like, yeah, you know, here's a good one for you. I actually had to disarm someone while I was skating on the beach path, okay? This biker got mad at me because he thought that I didn't look before I passed somebody and cut him off. And so he pulls up next to me and starts getting in my ear about, oh, you gotta look, you're creating an unsafe situation. And again, my initial reaction was defensive, right? Actually, I'm more of a counterattacker. My, you know, when I'm attacked, my instinctive impulse is to go on the offensive. So what I really wanted to say to that guy was, you know, give it a rest, pal. Mm-hmm. I'm the least of your problems out here. At least I look where I'm going. You should be worried about the pedestrians.
That's right.
But I didn't say that. I said, you know, I could see why, if you thought I was creating an unsafe situation, that you would be mad at me.
Yeah, and, you had him right there.
And that was it. Like, he couldn't say anything else. And he just sort of shrugged his shoulders and rode away. And that was a win for me. You know, to me, it's, I think the, where people go wrong with disarming is that they want to be right. You know, someone attacks them or someone confronts them, expresses strong anger, and they see that person as wrong, and they want to be right, and they want to explain to that person why they're right. And it's not about being right. It's about winning. want to win.
I agree on that one.
You don't want to be right. You want to create a victory for that situation. And in this case, a victory is, ideally, the ultimate victory when someone is rude or hostile with you is that person feeling thoroughly understood that they apologize to you for their demeanor.
Yeah.
That is winning. Now, you don't always get that. Sometimes you have to temper your expectations depending on who is coming at you. You know, I talk about what I call fundamentally unreasonable people. Some people that are, you know, we know who they are, right?
Sure,
people who just,
absolutely.
They're just angry by nature. They're very difficult to disarm. It doesn't mean that we don't try. It just means that we redefine what a victory is. So with someone who I assess to be fundamentally unreasonable, like that biker, a victory is that the person just goes away and leaves me alone.
Sure.
That's a good enough win for me.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, and I was going to say, we have some listener questions, and these go right into some of these other areas, and most of which I think is going to be more on the family side. So one of them says, as a single father of two teens, my oldest has been out of control this last year. She rages at me and her sister at the slightest provocation. We are now walking on eggshells to keep the peace, and it's not fair to my other daughter to have to deal with this. I'm about to send her to a therapeutic program if I can't find a solution. Are there methods that you could recommend that we can implement to modify this behavior? And this is from Bob in California.
Wow. So Bob, I'm sorry about that situation. It sounds extremely challenging. You know, and if it's, boy, if the fact that that your daughter has gotten to the point where you're considering, you know, sending her to some kind of placement sounds really serious. You know, this is, your daughter would fall into that category at the moment, temporarily. I'm not saying that this is her character, but at the moment, she's falling into that fundamentally unreasonable category where anything that you say sets her off. So I think that, you know, so your disarming is going to have to be, like, exquisite. It's going to have to be, you know, you're going to have to bring an A game every time. And again, you may have to adjust your expectations for what a victory is. So if a victory is her rages sort of only, you know, going to a level of 50 out of 100 instead of 100 out of 100, that's a win for the time being. She's not going to go from 100 to, you know, to a 10 overnight. You know, if she rages, you could try some disarming, depending on what the issue is and depending who's around. You know, you could say, hey, I'm glad that you're saying how you feel out loud. I would hate for you to feel that way and hold on to those feelings and have those feelings fester. And then, you know, see if you can find some truth in the complaint. Well, you know, what is, you know, how is she viewing the situation that is leading her to that level of rage? You know, how is she interpreting things? What is her truth? See if you can identify some of that and see what she says about it. See if you can, because sometimes even a little bit of movement in helping someone feel heard or validated can disarm some of that anger. I think you're going to need more than just disarming. It's going to take a lot of work.
You know, Jason, I think this question also opens up for a follow-up question that has to do with timing, and that is, when is the best time? So, and one of the things that I know we do, you know, you wait for an opening for therapeutic rapport, but when somebody's in the middle of a rage, is that necessarily the best time, or is there a time to just to be quiet and wait for a particular time or event to happen when you then start trying to disarm them?
Yeah, a really good question. I think that, so if we're defining rage as someone who's sort of screaming and kind of threatening, then a delay would definitely be warranted. You definitely have to prioritize safety over disarming, and you can't disarm if the situation is not safe. And if your daughter is in such a rage that, you know, that it's intimidating to you, then you are by definition rattled. It's going to be hard to disarm her when you're feeling so unsettled or provoked by her behavior. So you might just have to sort of start with a delay. You know, just find some safety for her and for you. Let the situation settle, and then come back. You know, and then come back to it at a time when she appears calmer. I mean, I don't know that there's ever going to be a perfect time for this, but if there's a point where at least she's not raging, you could say, wow, you know, you were really angry. You know, you were really angry back then. Maybe you wouldn't even leave it that. You could say, you know, when you said those things, it was hard to listen to, but a part of me is really grateful that you said those out loud, because it gave me some ideas, you know, as far as, you know, what's going on with you and what is bothering you.
Yeah, that's
what I'm trying to learn more about.
I think you hit the head on the nail on that one. We've only got about a minute to go, so I've got one more for you, and I'll read this one for you. It says, I was about to tie the knot when my fiance threw yet another tantrum. This time it escalated, and he kicked the side door of my car. Boy, that would make me mad. My mother said I needed to heed the warnings, quoting, familiarity breeds contempt. It really hurts because I care so deeply for him, but I just can't enter into a marriage where I am actually feeling afraid of him. I'm very anxious to listen to this interview, as I would—I don't really like to believe that there is some sort of hope. This is Beverly from New Jersey.
So I think that, you know, if you can become a master of disarming, you don't have to fear anger the way you used to. If you know that you have the ability to disarm someone's anger, it changes the way that you relate to people. You don't walk on eggshells. You don't wait for the next tantrum because you're not afraid of it. You when it comes, you know you will deal with it. So that's where it can empower you. Now, as far as a decision to, you know, to marry someone who's prone to anger, that's, you know, that's
That's a whole other question.
That's beyond disarming. It's a much bigger decision. But I think that I guess I would add that maybe you're not the only one who needs to work on this, right? Like, you know, I would hope that that your fiancé would be working as hard on managing his angry expressions as you would be working on your disarming techniques.
Well, Jason, I just want to tell you, I really appreciate you coming on and really want to acknowledge you for taking the time to not only come on the show, but to touch on a subject that I think that we're in a time right now to where we really need this across the board. So for anybody out there, if you want to learn more, and again, go to www.managingupset.com. This is Jason Sackett. Jason?
That was great, Jason. Seriously.
Please, anytime, to give us a call. We'd love to have you come back in. I think it's a topic that many people could appreciate. And again, and I love the fact that you're doing some of the training. We may be giving you a call. And again, for anybody else, can they reach you through that, or do you want them to have an email or a phone number?
They can find everything they need right through that website, managingupset.com. It's all my contact information is there, they can also Google me. There's one other thing I wanted to mention too. If
Please
people
do.
Want to see some demonstrations of disarming, like in video form, mm-hmm. there is a video demos tab on that website where they can see some more of these, you know, from start to finish, and it really breaks down each step.
That sounds great.
You appreciate it.
Yep.
All right. Well, thank you. And now,
thanks so much for having me. Good luck with your seven children, Art.
thank you.
We're not worthy.
I'm not worthy either. Trust me on that.
All right. Now, for everybody out there, please be sure to put us on your calendar and tune in next Monday when we're joined by Gabriella Van Rij to discuss her new book, With All My Might, The Ultimate Kindness Activist.
We got to get those two together.
There you go. And please visit our archives of past interviews at answersforthefamily.com or subscribe to our show through iTunes, Stitcher, YouTube, or Vimeo. If you like what you hear, please leave a review. It will help us reach more people and be greatly appreciated. And the next time you're on Facebook or Twitter, please remember to stop by our page and check out some of our latest posts. And if you like them, please like us and spread the word. Everybody, be good human beings.
Be nice to each other.
Absolutely. And be with us again next week on Answers for the Family.
Bye-bye.